Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
We are the Hairy Bikers. I'm Si.
And I'm Dave. And we're here to help you navigate your way through life's tricky troubles, travails, and tribulations, because we are the Agony Uncles.
Yes, remember that you're not alone in this world. You've got us. God help you all. We are always here to give you advice. And all you need to do is write to us. And the email address is agonyuncles@thehairybikers.co.uk. That's agonyuncles@thehairybikers.co.uk.
And posing the problems today, it's our man Jeeves.
Yes. Hello. Good morning. It's nice to see you. Or good morning for us when we're recording this anyway. And lovely to see everyone. And one of the burning questions we've had, actually, some a couple of videos that you put up a while ago. And I can't remember, I don't know which one of you it was, but one of you has a coffee pot which sits on top of a stove, on top of a stove. Yes. You put that up on Facebook. Now, is that you, Mr. King?
Yes, it's definitely my coffee pot on a stove. The only reason I know that is because I just turned the stove on and thought, shit, I better get that coffee pot off the top of it.
The question... I see. So it's not... the question we've had is, can you put a coffee pot on a stove? So clearly yes. The answer is no.
No, you can. You can. But I'd already potted the coffee, if you know what I mean. So there wasn't any water in my coffee pot, you see, because I drank it. So that's why I thought... But yes, no, you absolutely can. You just got to keep an eye on it.
It's a very posh coffee pot as well, but that cost a few quid, didn't it?
Hey, well, do you know what? I bought it, actually. It's an Alice. Is it Alice? Yeah,
oh,
Alice.
Oh, yes.
I bought it in Italy at a market stall, and I don't know, I didn't ask the fella, but it was half the price of what it would have been.
Fell off the back of a truck.
I think something like that. Yes, on the way to a posh shop in Florence, it stopped at Fellini Valdano, and I thought, right, I'm having that.
Well, we've solved the mystery. So you can put a coffee pot on top of the stove, because I think more and more people are using their stoves because maybe it's cheaper than putting the central heating on. I don't know, or boiling the kettle.
It's actually, to be fair, that's exactly what I'm doing at the minute because I've just got a tank of gas, LPG. And you know, if you just keep the stove on and control it properly, it keeps the house warm all night. It's great.
Nice. Well, we've got plenty of problems for you to be working through today. Looking forward to all of those.
Indeed. Right. And she's here. The Wonder Woman of Worries. It's our Tash. Posh Tash, who's not that posh at the minute, because she just looks frozen. Are you all right there, pet?
Yeah, I am chilly. But I'm fine. I'm very well, thank you. It's amazing what... a heated blanket might do for your day.
Oh, no.
So you've still got no hot water or central heating then, Tash?
No hot water, no central heating for 10 days. And I'm not going to go down the cost of living conversation crisis because we don't want to bring it all down too much. But it is amazing. I've got a little meter and I've been monitoring my electricity from having one electric heater on and some lights, some lamps in my room. But I'm only heating one room at the time with lights and an electric radiator because I've got nothing else. And honestly, it's been £100. It was £100 over 3 days, it was.
Good
and that
God.
Is horrifying to think one small room I'm lighting for £100.
No.
Yeah, horrifying. £2 on gas and £100 on electricity for one electric heater and three or four lights all day. Wow. And I'm so gobsmacked by it that I think actually it's been a very good experience for us here and how we are going to go forward and cut costs and be sensible. And my children have appreciated it. It's my son's birthday on Wednesday and all he wants is heating. He's suddenly got a whole new view on what's valued. Who needs the car when you're 17 and learning to drive? You just want a warm bedroom.
Do you know what, Tash? It's really interesting because Dave and I come from households that had 50p meters.
Yeah.
You know, because and then you went on to those posh keys that you had to put in that you got something done at the post office. And it was remarkable because it was at the forefront of your mind, and particularly at this time of the year going into the winter time, it was always terrifying for households like Dave and I's that you just constantly worried about it and you were constantly in it because the lunacy is that the poorest of us pay the most for the electricity. It's just, and
crazy.
Gas, it's just nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Really sad, actually. It really is sad. But it's been really interesting, actually. And it's, do you know what, though? On a flip side, we have all slept better. We are all, we're cold, but we sleep better through the night. My son does a lot of coughing because he's got chest problems. Without the heat and the dry heat and everything, we are a different family. So I'd say it's healthy at this moment.
Wow. Mm. Well, our Dave, let's get solving. Wiggle your jingle finger, dude, will you?
Beep, 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 boop, boom, bing.
Hello, hairy bikers. Here is my request. I have got a problem that I must get off my chest. Won't you listen to my story like a hairy jackanory? Because I heard your advice is the best.
In today's pile of perplexing problems, Uncle Si, Uncle Dave and Posh Tash, you're going to be solving these stresses. We have roast potato wrangling. We have modern pub problems, the wedding album blues, and we'll be getting busy with the fizzy in Confidential Corner. But we're going to start with roast potato wrangling. And this comes from Malcolm, who says, Dear Uncle Si and Uncle Dave, for years my mum always made the roast potatoes and then brought them to whoever's house we were at for us to reheat for Christmas Day. And as Si might put it, they were epic. Sadly, Mum is no longer with us, and for the last couple of years since we lost her, the potato offerings at Christmas have been, well, rubbish, mainly because she would never tell us what she did to them. So for Christmas this year, I would like to make the ultimate roast potato. I want my roast potatoes to be the best that anyone in the family has ever tasted anywhere in the history of roast potatoes, or at least since they last had one of Mum's. I want them written about in history books. In short, I need you to help me cheat. So please, what sort of potatoes should I buy? And what on earth do I do with them? Many thanks. Malcolm, over to you.
Do you know what I think one of the problems today with roast potatoes is that when you buy a bag of potatoes from a supermarket, it says like white potatoes or red potatoes. You don't know what potato it is. You don't know how long it's been stuck there. And that potato starts to produce sugar, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And then you'll never get it crispy because it's more water than potato. You need to get a good variety of potato and a potato that hasn't been stored for like 6 months or a year. It's the same making chips. Do you remember once we were kingy, we were making chips and and we were trying to make the ultimate chips. And in the end, we went to a farm. It was, because it was near me, we got some taters from a farm in Flukborough, which had been dug. And miraculously, our chips were magnificent. And we must have done about six batches from various potatoes from supermarkets. So we were getting nowhere with it.
Yeah, that's so true. Because the older the potato is, the starch is a derivative of sugar anyway. But it turns more sugary. So you know sometimes you get those when you cut chips, they're kind of slightly sweet, and you'd go, well, that's a bit weird. They're like potatoes that have been stored for a protracted length of time, as Dave was saying. And the most important thing is you want more potato than water. So first of all, you've got to buy the right potatoes. Try, if you can, to go to your local fruit and veg shop, because he'll know. He'll buy bags of potatoes in from wholesales, and he'll know how long they've been there and when they were dug and stored and all that. And then the next thing is, there's loads of tips and tricks that you can do. Go on, mate.
I'm just going to say, I was just thinking of, there's a company that we visited. If you're like top-end particular potato, it's Carroll's Potatoes in Northumberland.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like connoisseurs of the spud world. So the varieties of potatoes that they produce are ridiculously, you know, obscure and good. Things like the Aran Victory and potatoes that we'd never tasted before. But they'll guarantee that they're fit for purpose. You need to spend money with that. But like as Si said, you go to the greengrocers. First thing is, with your potato, part boil them first, blanch them. Blanch them for about 8 minutes and just scruff them up and let them go cold before you proceed any further.
That right there is the master of all potato wisdom, because rough them up in a colander, and as Dave says, you cannot do anything with them. The next stages of roasties is you need to reheat all of that quite hard and quite quick, and cook them so they get a really lovely crispy outer. But there's more tricks, isn't there, dude?
Yes.
Can I just ask before you go on that one point? I'm literally, I know I'm preaching to the converted of all our audience, but I'm loving this. I'm fascinated. You're amazing. But I didn't know about that potato and the water and the sugar, etc. But when you parboiled them and then you you put them in a colander or in the saucepan, I shake it and that gets that rough edges that you're saying. If you leave them, does it not keep them cooking for a while? Should you run them through cold water to like you do with Brussels sprouts?
Well, no, because if you've run them through cold water, just let them go cold naturally. They're not going to cook all the way through. Dave says, it's roughly about 8 minutes. Okay. And because the potatoes will be pretty dense. Because if you put them in cold water to cool them down quick, you don't want that. You just want the process to be as gentle as it can on the spud. And also another top tip, bring the water when you put the potatoes in cold water, and then bring the water up to boil as opposed to dropping them in boiling water. Because all it does is it goes, the potato and all the starches kind of combine and it's just not very good. And that was a top tip that we got from actually Carol's potatoes that Dave was mentioning.
Well, one thing that we can't guarantee when we said 8 minutes is, of course, it depends how big you cut your roast potatoes.
That's true.
Some people like them like farmhouse sautés, which are like tiny and only take a couple of minutes. And other people like whole potatoes, which will take a bit longer. But then you have your tin with your fat of choice. And yeah, I think goose fat roasters are great, but you can get away with sunflower oil, but get that fat searingly hot. Then put your potatoes in. And one chefy trick that we were told was to sprinkle a tablespoon of cornmeal or polenta over the potatoes and toss them in the oil, because the cornmeal and polenta gives you a crispy, crispy, super crispy coat.
And you can put a bit of salt and pepper in that as well, should you want to. So that seasoned, crispy, gorgeous potatoes.
I feel overexcited with the information. I thought I knew how to cook roast potatoes. I think I do quite nice ones, but I feel like I want to go and cook them now. I'm quite excited, but I think that I'm concerned I can't go and get Carol's. Can I just ask one quick question? If I'm going to a bog standard supermarket and I can only go there, I haven't got my greengrocer. Do I go Maris Piper or King Edward? What's the roast potato one there if we can't get Carol's?
I'll tell you what to do. It's funny because the growing seasons are all over the place, because try and buy from your country of origin. And try and buy from the greengrocers if you can. If you can't, then have a look on the date. Have a look on the pack and see.
Fresh.
So it's just, you just need them as, that's the key, as fresh as possible. So if it's a Maris Piper, if it's a King Eddie, any one of those, the variety of potato is key, but either the freshest is the best.
Okay.
Yes, great. Some go fluffy for mash. But I think Yukon Gold's good for roasties as well. Yeah. That's a good one. And there's a Dutch variety, I can't remember. But they're really good roasties.
They're really good, aren't they?
Another
thing, if you're going to spend some money and you want those sort of epic potatoes, there's lots of great potato specialists that do old varieties of potatoes online.
Wow.
And I've used, I can't remember who it was. There was one, an Irish one, that I used about 4 years ago, and they were fantastic. So there's loads of different places you can get your taties from.
Through your letterbox.
Remember once, Kingy, we were in Ireland and we filmed with this farmer. He'd won an MBE for potato production, and he set himself to breed the ultimate all-rounder potato. He could do everything well, and it was called the Sunbeam potato.
That's it.
And I'm not sure if you can get that now, but he was quite an incredible character, really. He put us to work on the spud machine, and it was amazing, actually, this man's obsession with the potato. Yeah. And you know, you realize it's not the humble spud. Well, people write books on the potato. It's really versatile and fabulous.
Can you remember, mate, when we were there and we're just in this random pub and they got the old school school scoops of potatoes. I can't remember what we had it with. I've never tasted a potato like it still. It still lives with me. They were flipping epic.
And Portuguese do amazing potatoes as well. We ate some amazing spuds in Portugal.
Yes, that is true. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Sorry for her now that she's written in, because you've given us a lot of information. I'm overexcited about going to potatoes, but she's going to have to really work on that information and filter out where she's going, what she's doing.
I think it was a he, Tash.
It was a he. I'm sorry.
Malcolm will be pleased to
Malcolm,
to
I'm
know
sorry. That, never been good with names. His potatoes will be good.
He'll have the finest potatoes of all time.
Food.
makes everything better.
Our next problem is called the Wedding Album Blues. And for this, I need one male name. So, Uncle Dave, could I have a male name, please?
Rupert.
Thank you. Rupert writes, a few months ago, my wife told me she didn't want to be married to me anymore and has applied for a divorce. Now, this was a shock to me at the time, as I was very happy. At first, I wanted her to stay and change her mind, but since then, she's made the situation very difficult and home life is, frankly, terrible. So my mindset has now changed and all I want to do is get it all gone so I can finally start to move on. She wants to use the court to sort out finances. Luckily, there are no children involved. But even so, that means it's all going to roll on until the court hearing in March. I'm trying to keep myself busy and my mind occupied as best I can, but as you can imagine, it can be very difficult. Now, as I think you have both been in this situation, I'd love your advice on how to keep moving forward during this time and keep positive. And one specific thing, what should I do with the wedding album? Many thanks, Rupert. Over to you.
I tell you what I found really difficult. If you can, just try, Rupert. It's really, really important to try and first of all, keep calm because there's loads of emotions going around and stuff. And just try and be kind and fair. And there are some times that you absolutely won't feel like that. But just try and do. Try and keep that at the forefront of your mind. The court is neither here nor there, really. They can only apply the law. It doesn't matter about the emotions of what you're going through. They will only apply the law. If that's what your wife's entitled to, that's what you'll get. If that's what you're entitled to, that's what you'll get. There's very little argument that way. The solicitors and lawyers will say different, but fundamentally, the judge will stand there and go, you get that, you get that, on you go. That's how it works, and it's a cutting to the chase of it. But if I were you, just to move on properly, you have to be kind, and you have to be considerate, and it's the antithesis of what you're actually feeling at the time. But it's important that you do that. That would be my advice anyway.
Yeah, I think it's many, many years ago, I got divorced, and I was so much in debt, it was survival.
Yeah,
I couldn't. I had to just work 24/7 to get me dig myself out of a hole, really. But I had no powers of negotiation, put it like that. Yeah. It's a long tale. But no, I know what you mean about the photo album. Like the first, the wedding album, you look at it and you're all teary. Then I'd stick it in the attic and come back to it in a decade's time, and you might think it's quite funny.
Is it not just I love that funny. I wasn't ready for funny. It's a memory, as horrible as it is now. That day was a wonderful day. That was part of his life. It's part of built who he is now. And I definitely don't think I would sit there and put it in the bin or burn it or whatever. It might, as you say, it might hurt right now, but I don't think you should just lose it or give it to her. It's his memory. She wrecked the relationship. He keeps it, and he can look back and smile one day, if not laugh, like Dave says.
Oh, I've got a confession, right, on my wedding day. On the Saturday, I got a phone call to ask if I could come down. It was on the Thursday, because I was getting married on the Saturday. Could I come round and help clean the church up? Because somebody had broken into the church and set fire to the organ in the organ loft. So the church smelt of smoke and cinders, and I was clearing out all the debris. And so went down the aisle, there was like the verger on his Bon Tempany electric organ, you know. that was a sign, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It, you know, somebody tries to burn the church down. It's
true. Where did you put the matches, Dave? Where did you hide the matches?
Oh, it wasn't me. I was good. No, I was the one who was faced with all the work, with the poor vicar taking all the burning embers out of the church.
Oh. Wow.
But it did smell like a bonfire.
Gosh.
So, no, it was...
So you weren't coming up smelling of roses from the beginning. It was horrible.
Oh, no, it smelled like something Guy Fawkes had left behind. But, no, it's emotionally devastating.
Yeah, it's horrible. Horrible, 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 horrible position to be in. Awful. And you wouldn't wish it on anybody.
No.
It's just... But it's that's life, innit? And, you know...
Time heals, doesn't it? I mean, it's...
I think that's it. Dave, I just think you've hit the nail on the head. It's like... If you prepare, somebody once said to me, he said, look, it'll be 5 years. It's 5 years until it until the dust settles and everybody settles into new routines and new relationships and new lives and new partners and all of that, and there's a level of acceptance. He said, have that in the back of your mind and it'll be fine. And it's true. It's about 5 years. It was exactly about that, actually. It was about that.
Okay, Rupert, so just apply those rules then. It will get better, and 5 years is what you're looking at. But at the same time, yeah, just keep moving on. Don't chuck the wedding album away. It might come in handy in the future.
Even if it's just to put it on your dartboard and throw stuff at it, you know.
No, I mean,
No, sorry.
Put it in the cupboard and forget
did
about
that,
it.
Did that just come out? It did, didn't
yeah,
it?
It's
yeah.
part of one's history.
Yeah, the makeup.
If you got problems, you'll be fine. Just drop the agony uncles a line.
This letter comes from a gentleman who is 84 years old. Well, his daughter's helped him write an email, but I am going to change his name. So we'd like a name, if possible, Posh Tash, if you could have... but perhaps an elderly gentleman's name. Perhaps that would be more appropriate.
Percy.
Percy writes, Dear Hairy Bikers...
Hold on, I'm sorry.
What?
I've got Percy the park keeper in my head.
Oh, he's lovely, Percy the park keeper.
No. Oh, no. Yeah, Percy, okay.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know what else there could be, an old man.
No, let's just call her Percy. Percy's fine.
Percy's fine. I do like the way you think there's only one old man's name. What else could there be? Percy.
And obviously, Percy is a euphemism for an old friend's old chap anyway, isn't it?
It is,
really?
That's right.
Oh, I see, I hadn't even thought of that. Oh, yeah. No.
Okay. Point Percy at the porcelain.
Point Percy at the park keeper. No.
Can I just, before you go into the problem then, also, I learnt the other day that apparently a word for a pair of breasts is norks. Yes. I've never heard of norks.
Norks, yeah.
Yeah, norks, yeah.
I never knew that one. Pair of norks. Posh touching a norks.
See, that's glad you said it. We get pushed off the airways. The BBC never bust. We used a word like Knox.
You can't
really?
Do that. Oh, yeah, Knox! No. Goodness gracious me! Compliance nightmare. Right, let's move on to Percy's problem. Percy says, "Dear Hairy Bikers, I like you. I'm from the north of England, Carlisle to be precise. Though I'm much older than you, I'm 84. I used to be a biker though. I had a few. My favourite being a BSA Gold Flash." That I used to go out courting on in the 1950s.
Nice.
Ooh, lovely.
I like your television programme and my daughter plays me your programmes podcast, I think he means, which is why I'm writing. With my daughter's help, admittedly, I don't really like computers. And my question is this. Why do pubs all now feel the need to do fancy food instead of what we used to have? On a Saturday, I'd pick up a young lady on the back of my bike and take her to a pub about 10 miles away, where I'd treat her to the best ham, egg and chips you could buy. That always got me a kiss, at least. I always remembered that pub, even when, after national service, I moved to Portsmouth. So as a treat, my daughter took me back there for my 84th birthday, back to the same pub. I couldn't get ham, egg and chips now, though. If I wanted a miso-glazed sea bream fillet, I'd be fine. Or something called a partridge saltimbocca, but not ham, egg and chips. It's the same at home, and even fish and chips from my local chippy cost about £10 now. It used to be a shilling. I can't help thinking that things were better in the old days, and as you lads know how to do a good old-fashioned bit of ham, egg and chips, can't you do something to stop pubs messing about with good, honest food? Asks Percy. Over to you.
No. Anyway, I know what you're saying, Percy, but the thing is that, you know, it's about supply and demand, isn't it? And the thing is that there is absolutely, definitely a place for great ham, egg and chips.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a shame that some pubs go down that route of just, you know, like zhuzhing it up for the sake of it. Because if you fancy ham, egg and chips, why isn't it on the menu? It's just as great as a miso-stroked sea bream.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's funny though, isn't it, really? We find out off our website and stuff what recipes people actually download and use. And when we did our book, Everyday Winners, you know, and we appealed for people to actually write in and tell us what they ate. And we got 25,000 main meals that people eat on a daily basis. And it's food that they love, food that they love and prepared for them. And a lot of it was what you would say was fairly predictable. And ham, egg and chips, when it's good, it's a thing of joy.
It is.
Tom Kerridge, he has a book, I've got Michelin starred restaurants, and it's pub food. And it is like his take on pub classics. And it is very, very good. But there again, you know, the question is, do you need to mess too much? If you have two good free-range eggs, a nice piece of ham, and proper cooked chips from a good potato that are crispy and lovely, a bit of salt and vinegar, you dip your chip in the egg, take a bit of ham on that. It takes some beating, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
That and a nice steak and kidney pie, or steak and kidney pudding, belly pork. See, that's something that I think people find it in a pub, if it's on a pub menu, people find it hard to get, if you eat meat, find it hard to get past the belly pork if it's cooked properly.
Do you know what? My husband would be best friends with Percy. If he can hunt down a ham, egg and chips, he'll take it every time. It doesn't matter where you are, if someone's doing it, he'll have it. But I really remember growing up, my grandfather used to take me swimming every Sunday when I was very little, and he'd always take me to this lovely little hotel in St Albans, and he'd take me and he'd give me a breakfast. And if it was later on in the morning, we'd stop and he'd always have a steak or a ham, egg and chips. And then he got very excited because the Beef Eater chain opened. And Beef Eater had a really good ham, egg and chips in it. I think there are still Beef Eaters nowadays, aren't there, I think, somewhere. But, that, you know, he always wanted that. That's what it had to be, a ham, egg and chips or a steak. And he used to say, hold the rabbit food. He didn't like the watercress with the steak. But but no, honestly, I think ham, egg and chips, it's not for me, if I'm honest. But I do find, and I think give Percy some hope, that there are a few places actually near us that I think are trying to bring it back onto a pub menu. They've got their sort of slightly fancier gastro pubby menu, and they now are bringing it back again. I do think there's a surge now.
Hmm. I think that's the key, isn't it? Because, you know, as we're saying, there's nothing better than that. There's nothing better than a great cottage pie. There's nothing better than a shepherd's pie. There's just, you know, it's fantastic food. And it's part of the makeup and heritage and culture that we have around food in the UK. And the great thing about the food that we have here, it's incredibly eclectic because of the, thank God, the cultural influences that we've had over the centuries, which is brilliant and worth celebrating. However, there is still a place for all of those traditions, all of those great, great foods that we love and remember and that are full of nostalgia. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I think our food culture is broad enough for everybody, actually.
Absolutely.
There is somewhere near me, there's two pubs I've been going to, and one is, you know, I'll go and have I do a really good burger and stuff and the ham, egg and chips. I'll go there for that. But then there's another pub, if I want to take some people to on a Friday or Saturday night, you know, I can have, and they're actually doing, you know, snails, escargot and sea bass and stuff. And it's really nice. And both pubs, you know, it's a bit like our food culture. We are multicultural, which we're very proud of. You know, we can eat around the world in this country. And within our own food culture, what is our food culture? Our food culture is so broad. Mm. Within the traditional British food culture, there's room for the more finer foods, and there's room for the traditionals as well. You know, the creme brulee will sit alongside a rice pudding. You know, it's nice to have choice.
Yeah. Do you think it's changed though? Because I live in London, and so it's very different. People from all over the world, and pubs change hands all the time. But do you think it's come from the changing world where it used to be the landlord and the landlady, truly the landlord and the landlady, and the landlady did the cooking, and the landlord was at the bar, and he was the friend, and she was the great cook, and you went for her ham, egg and chips maybe. And I just, I don't see that landlord-landlady environment as much, especially where I live. It must be somewhere else.
Actually, my ex-wife's part of her family, he came from the, he was in the army, and he was a caterer in the army, and they took this pub, but because the pub was tied, they wanted to do exactly that, Tash. They wanted to be, you know, he was actually, the roles were reversed. She was the friend and he was in the kitchen. And they just couldn't make it work because at the back of all of that, the face of it, was this corporate nightmare that they just couldn't make it work. Because every time they did make it work, the company that was behind it put the price up. So they were just like, well, what, you know, it's not even minimum wage that we're earning, and it's our business. Mm. So there's a culture of that no longer facilitates that end, unless the landlord and landlady have bought their pub and they can bring in the beers that they want to bring in and cook the food that they want to cook.
Yeah.
Because actually those are successful, but you have to have a significant amount of money to make that work.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it's such a shame. But you're right, I think it does. It definitely has changed, definitely.
But remember, like, the places that are doing the fine dining, they have to be good because you only get it wrong once and people don't come back.
Yeah.
You know, but whereas your ham, egg and chips is quite straightforward. You know, it's a safe option. It's funny that there's a pub near me as well that I've discovered, and they talk about it. It's famous for its cheese and onion rolls at lunchtime. And they don't know how they get the bread so good. Obviously, they're buying it in, but it's really good. And they've just got this knack. And people talk about the cheese and onion rolls, and they'll go there and have, you know, a pint and a couple of rolls at lunchtime. And they just do them at lunchtime. But it is funny, though. It proves with food, if you get it dead right...
Yeah,
people will come, and they'll come again and again. Yeah.
And it doesn't have to, as David says exactly, it doesn't have to be fancy. It just has to be great.
Yeah, exactly.
So there you go, Percy. I think there's hope for you. It sounds like there's certainly a move back towards getting some more traditional stuff in there, but just keep searching and don't ever stop, and maybe get your motorbike again. Maybe that'll do it for you.
Well, if you're down, now don't get drunk. Just send an email to the Agony Uncle.
It's time to head to Confidential Corner. Getting busy with the fizzy is what it's called. One female name from Uncle Dave, please, and one male name from Uncle Si.
Mary.
Trevor.
Okay. Mary writes, how can I get my Trevor to forgive me? We like to have fun at sexy time with food. It might be ice cream dripped on his body, or he sometimes gets out the strawberries and cream, that kind of thing. And I thought it'd be nice to share one of my favourite childhood sweets, space dust, which he had never heard of. I used to love the way it popped and fizzed on my tongue. I thought it might give him a nice sensation. So I got him nice and relaxed and then tipped a packet of it over his old chap.
No!
Once it started fizzing, we both realised it probably wasn't going to give him the same sensation that I thought he might get. In actual fact, he had to sit watching the telly for an hour afterwards with his thingy dangling in a Pyrex bowl of warm water to soothe him. He says we will never have food fun time again. How can I win him round, please? He likes your show, so he'll listen to you. Over to you, says Mary.
You sound dangerous, missus. Next time you've been putting mustard all over his bollocks. Space dust on your little nether mat, on your pie wacket. Whoa.
I'd go back with the strawberry. What? Yeah, trash tash.
Yeah,
I'd go back to I'd go back to the strawberries and cream. You can't be putting space dust on your old chap. What? That's mad.
No, I don't get this food thing. But there is like a perversion called splodging, isn't there? And there was a program on the telly about it, splodgers. And what they do is they, and you like cover each other with cake. They put polythene on the floor. And it's called splodging.
Oh, wow.
But not that I I've looked it up or anything, but no, there was a program on the telly for splodgers. But you know, no, Kingy, no.
It's not a very sexy word, is it? You might spread the food over each other, or you might
drizzle splodging.
It. You don't splodge it. It's like you kind of got a couple of pies and go, horrible.
Well, that sounds more attractive, a couple of pies, than having your old chap covered in space dust. What would you call that? The firework or something?
It'd be like a sparkler, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Can you imagine if you got it in your belly button, though? That would cause no end of worry. I mean, your old chap, at least you can wash it off. Your belly button, you'd be there for weeks trying to get it out, wouldn't you?
Oh, sitting there, well, I mean, it's bad enough if you sting yourself with chilli, isn't it? You know, you have to put your little member in the wash basin for a bit.
Or yoghurt.
Yeah, a friend of ours, he was 16, I think 17 at the time, and he was going down to Nando's, you know, where they do peri-peri chicken.
Yeah.
Peri-peri chicken, sorry, peri-peri. And they were having, he was obviously a bit of bravado. I can do the seriously hot sauce. You know, his mates are going, I think medium's enough for me. He showed off, he went for the really hot sauce, and then he went to the loo, and then came back with tears in his eyes because he forgot to wash his hands before he went to the loo.
No.
He learned the hard way.
The worst. the worst.
I've got visions of her doing sherbet dib dab, you know, at the moment, and you know that's similar.
I guess. That would be just as uncomfortable. I honestly, I'd go to, look. If you want to push the boat out, try trifle or something kind of relatively inert.
Angel
you
delight.
Know, it's like you don't want. Yeah. What?
Just. Oh, well, think of the mess. Oh. No, it's not my cup of tea at all.
No, no, Dave. No, no. I mean, you know. No. No. I mean, food should be on a table, not on each other's. But I mean, I could understand
eating sushi off your beloved one because the body heat improves the flavour of the rice.
Yes.
No, that's a fact.
Yeah, that is a fact, actually. Yeah, sushi. Yeah. Yeah.
That wouldn't smell nice, though. You don't want to have raw fish over you.
No, fresh fish doesn't fishy.
Well, Mary, we don't know that we have much sensible advice for you, but all we can say is don't ever do that again.
No, good Lord, poor fella. No.
Or he might pay her back. He might go, here we go, sweetheart. Now try this.
Oh, that would be good.
You'll regret it.
It could just go, that. You see, then it's going into S&M. You know, and that's just like...
No. Don't ever let him do the ironing for you, Mary, or he might be starching the crutch on your thong.
No.
If your life's in a mess, then the email address is theagonyuncles@thehairybikes.co.uk. Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening to us on the Agony Uncles podcast, and we do remember to send us in your troubles, because without them, we haven't got a show. The email is agonyuncles@thehairybikers.co.uk. That's the agonyuncles@hairybikers.co.uk.
And while you do that, let me remind you that there'll be a new episode of the Agony Uncles every Friday. So do remember to subscribe and follow to make sure you don't miss a single one.
So, from Posh Tash,
bye.
The Thin White Duke,
bye.
And us,
bye-bye.